the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Yamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anattā. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha, homage to all who are approaching this holy path, homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies or practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiampi tatiampi sabha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
So just a reminder that Sunday morning groups are recorded and made available to monthly donors. I have another question. Does the water feature limit anyone's ability to hear? Does it sound okay? Okay.
I'm going to pause this. I'll send you another one.
Okay, what should we look at this morning?
I'm continuing to have a sleep deprivation workshop for the fourth day, and I'm kind of excited because in my kind of research shows the conditioning is cornered, and that's a corner that's kind of left to operate. And so the practice goes great. It's during the day, I'm here, I'm in tasks. Even the previous night's story, oh, I'm going to feel terrible the next day. I saw, what was it, Saturday? Saturday was a great day. Even I took a sleeping aid at night twice, and I didn't walk. And that was like the strongest medicine I had. So and then I was like, wow, this is like, this was kind of my my line. And now conditioning is crossing that line.
So you're having this sleep deprivation workshop, and that in your fourth day into it.
Yeah.
And that there's some excitement arising around it because it feels to you as if it's conditioning is cornered.
Yeah.
It's like there's this one area
yeah.
that it's, you know, kind of its last, well, we would hope it's last hold on. And even last night, you did everything that you had within your control to, you know, to get some sleep, and it didn't work. It was...
There was a night before.
The night before,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So last night, because it's Sunday, I was like, okay, let's just have it all. I can sleep in. You know, let's just see what you got. So I took just a kind of homeopathic medicine that usually doesn't work. I laid down, and so there is like thoughts and tries to go like thinking, and so, and I'm kind of meditating. So I'm just like, I did best I can, what else I have to do? So I'm meditating, and I think I'm drifting into sleep. And then what happened, I got into kind of fear. And there was some kind of a noise, like along the path, and then something hit the hermitage. But because it's such a wooden box, basically, it makes the sounds like very big and scary. So I'm in that like almost drifting, and then this scary thing happens. And then I thought, wow, the rush of fear that goes from through all my body, and I feel like my heart is rising into my throat. And the heart is beating so loud that when the noise happened, I freeze to listen, kind of like, what was that? But my heart is beating in my ears so loud, I cannot hear anything. I just hear boom, 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 but that's my heart. So, so like, wow, how did that, is this some conditioning kind of pulling some kind of a trick on me? Was it some kind of, you know, like a branch fell off and, but then triggers such a huge reaction in the body? But there was, and then I found like, wow, I have a heart in my throat. I cannot hear anything, but at the same time, I'm curious. I'm still curious, what is that? And then I heard the story about the bear, and so I'm like, wow, I want to see that bear, because the bear. So I noticed the curiosity and this immense fear, kind of both at the same time. And then like, would I go, curiosity wants to go out of hermitage with a flashlight, see where is the bear. Fear wants to like crawl like under the blanket. But some there with two of them, the heart is calming down, there is no further noises, I'm staying with it, and then I'm like, okay, maybe just calming myself, so what can I do? So I go back to the story now, replaying the fear, what could it mean? So that's what conditioning wants kind of to pull me in. Curiosity now meets the like somebody who wants to sleep. So I'm not going with a flashlight. I'm calling myself. I look at the time, 11:30. Okay, still have plenty of time if I can go to sleep. And I'm meditating, and then this happens again. So, like, step, boom, and somebody like hit the hermitage, like they were running. So it feels like, I mean, I could have maybe made this noise if a dog would run on the path, and then they just like scrape the hermitage, because the hermitage that stands on a corner. And then it's like, wow! Again, but I already been through this, and but this time I think I felt asleep a little more. So I thought like my first reaction was like, I'm just gonna scare this animal. So I'm just gonna bang at the hermitage, like with my hand. So this rush of energy happens, and I'm trying to bang, and I realize like, wow, I cannot raise my arm. Because I'm in kind of half sleep state, I see a very small piece of my vision with my eyes, not even the full vision, and I cannot move my arm. But the heart is already at the throat, and the pumping and the fear is there, and I'm kind of paralyzed. like, wow. So then came kind of the second fear of, I'm afraid of being in this state. But then curiosity comes again. Wow, I've never been in this state. Mm-hmm. What does this look like? there was a 12:30. And again, after that, it's so quiet. It's quiet, like quiet. So then I'm thinking, well, if I would be like in a city, in my apartment, and I would hear at night this noise, it would probably kind of drone into noises of the city, which constantly happens at night. So these noises may be only heard because of that silence. So am I afraid of a silence? You know, because these noises are probably like random things, you know, something like snake or whatever. It's just not a big deal. But then conditioning is like, okay, now this is real, we have to go do something, we have to get up, it's 12:30, and I'm like, okay, I'm not going to get up. And then something came up about the Shiri's responses in the email class. She was talking about the sex fantasies, anything happens inside the bag of skin is okay, as long as I don't take this outside. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, wow. I'm here, I'm in a bag of skin, I'm not going anywhere. And then came like, how about sexual fantasies? They're okay too. And in the past, for me, sexual fantasies were not okay. So they're supposed to be suppressed. I have to immediately like switch my attention. So, okay, I'm like, let's have sexual fantasies. And I'm in a bag of skin with all this fear, and the amazing thing is I'm kind of sexually exciting, and fear is there, so my belief was something about like I cannot have two of them at the same time or something, but it's I'm kind of in that workshop of like, wow. Things happening in the body is just totally out of my control. You know, there's excitement, there's a fear, there's a throat, there is on the back also, the kind of on the back along my spine, there is some kind of hair or something. Mm-hmm. It just stands up.
Mm-hmm. So you were having this workshop and just being extremely aware of, it sounds like, everything. Mm-hmm. The various sensations that were going on in the body, and maybe the various labels that get put on sensations, you know, whether it's excitement, whether it's fear, you know, whatever those stories are that roll around and attach themselves to the sensations. And so you were just having this opportunity to, and it sounds like having an opportunity too, to see what the experience of like, what is like, let's see, that came out wrong, and what it is like to experience that drifting off to sleep and the states in between going to sleep and being awake and just seeing it all.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And what a priceless opportunity in a city. It just never happens. Mm-hmm. There is no a chance mm-hmm. of so many things kind of happening outside. He is a quiet projecting the body and the quiet of environment and the silence allows all this. The first thought came, this is animal fear. This is kind of the fear that I project people had when they were sleeping in a cave and then something just passed by and they reacted to these animals. I never had a chance to reach that kind of a depth of fear, to explore outside. So I'm extremely grateful for that. And then at 2 o'clock, I was already for sure asleep, and it happened again. And at this time it felt like two animals passed by. And a second again banged on the hermitage. And then I thought like, well, maybe it's Apache or like one of the dogs just went, you know, and it's a big dog, so it could be. But then I was like, well, maybe there is a human, but maybe somebody with a flashlight and looking around. So I'm already finding myself. I skip this kind of curiosity. I'm already acting. I'm already getting up. I'm with a flashlight. Like, where's, you know, where's the stuff? And I'm like, oh, no. Again, this is like, I don't want to go do stuff. I want to just kind of bring it all here, lay down, you know, meditate. And I was gone. And since then, I got sleep. Yeah.
So, I project that it sounds like in the description, you had an opportunity to wear something out.
Yes.
You know, this experience kept arising over and over and over again, and until it got to the place where it was like, oh, I recognize you, and there was no longer going with it, and there was an ability to relax, and then you had the experience of sleep.
Yes, thank you for that. Yes, it felt like, now I realize, it felt like it was coming out of me, and now it's like came, you know, it's just there. And another thing came at that point, well, at two was like, already was like so scary, and it's two of them, that kind of spontaneously came reassurances. And somebody said, Pasha, you are safe. And I was like, wow. I believe it. It's so scary, but I believe it. I believe somebody said, you're safe here. And I remember, like, a few years ago, I was here on, like, some retreat, and one of the monks was saying, and another thing, we're safe here in this environment. You know, out in the world, there is conditioning dangers, you know, like, you can get yourself into situations, so, like, but here it's really safe, and that kind of mantra somebody remembered say that, and I was amazed by, like, I'm in a fear, and I hear this, and I feel the safety in the whole body, but at the same time I'm realizing it's kind of me saying it, and it works, and it's amazing. So thank you for the reassurances and the mentor, and it's just. And it's just there, in the at the last resort.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me in the beginning when you were talking about being on those parallel tracks of being afraid, being excited, being afraid, being excited, and then having that experience of, you know, conditioned mind wanting to go on about the scary story again, and then having an actual experience of. We might say what's authentic, or the mentor, or, you know, the heart just saying, Pasha, you're safe, and recognizing that for what it was, and just having, I don't know how, the heart knew that was the truth.
Yes.
And so then there was just the falling into that truth, and that having that scary other story just evaporate.
Yes, that's a trust. I think it's a, I don't know, maybe it's a developed trust into that voice or the mentor or the reassurances, but somebody is like, oh, thank you, thank you for that.
Thank you. Renee.
It reminds me of, I just heard something recently that in order to get courage, life will provide the experience to that will help you be courageous.
I love that. Let's just say it again.
Yeah.
In order to get courage or develop courage, life is going to provide us with the experiences we need to do that, to develop that courage.
Yeah.
And what is it that we always say, you know, we just get exactly what we need for our own liberation.
Yeah, and I actually have to give credit where I heard it, okay, so... I was watching Evan the Almighty, the movie, and it was at the end, Morgan Freeman's God, and he said that, and it was great.
That's great.
Yeah. I need to talk about the identity I was talking about the other night.
There was this identity up that just felt like real karma.
Yeah.
Really real. And it felt like if you were to not to let that, to drop that, or to, you know, choose different action. It just, like, it was bringing up all kinds of intense levels. Talk about fear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And feelings, I would imagine, of annihilation. And
I was at the beginning of that awareness of that identity, and, you know, going through the stages of it, of feeling wrong and bad, like I had done something wrong, and then seeing that that wasn't the case, and then that the ego was, acting all that out, and I was unconscious, and then you know, continuing to have the awareness of it, watching it, seeing how, you know, of course, experiences arose to see it, and then choosing not to go with it. I think we were talking about how the identity is going to take some hits, you know, and that was really helpful to hear. And so not being identified with it, since this has become into my awareness, the identity is not taking hits because I'm not identified with it at this point, and being able to choose to take the choice of the heart versus the choice of conditioning, at least as far as I'm aware, right? Because so I still see that it's a deep, deep karmic identity.
So you're not in the identity right now, so it's not taking any hits. And then I forgot what you said after that.
Just having a choice. So being aware of when the experience arises, for that identity to react, then having the choice of not going with it, and it doesn't feel very hard right now.
Because you're not it.
Yeah, right.
You're not identified, so that those experiences can arise, and you can make a different choice to go with the heart.
Yeah, and so I'm seeing also that there's different levels of it. Like if it were my kids, it's going to be harder. If it's just a friend, it's easier.
Are you talking about the reaction of others, or?
Well, the connection is, if the connection's stronger, I don't know the right word for it, but, so like, for example, if my child needs something related to money, then it would be harder for me to say no than if it were just a friend who needed, you know, me to pay for dinner or something, you know, that just as an example.
Yeah.
And so I haven't had a lot of experiences with the kids since whatever day that was. But I have had experiences with friends, and then just watching the conversation about it come up, and just to go, oh, there it is.
Yeah. Interesting. So having the experiences arise in kind of what you might say a less charged and, you know, interaction, and just being able, which is, you know, maybe going back to what life, you know, giving us what we need as we're ready to, you know, we're ready to be able to deal with it. And so be able to see it in this situation with less charge and just make different choices.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sort of in that stage of bliss with it, like sort of like, this is really freeing, and oh my gosh, this has been controlling my life, and, you know, all this. And then I'm just being aware. We've been talking a lot about conditioning, taking control over our practice, just to watch, to stay in that awareness.
Yeah.
There's nothing to do, first of all. Like, I don't have to do anything, because, of course, it would have me go do something. Like, oh, I have to go tell them no, and them no, and, you know, no, that's not, I don't need to do anything like that. I just need to wait and pay attention. And then the second part that I want to be aware of, because this morning on the call with my buddy, I had an awareness that, oh, I had seen this a long time ago, kind of like the attic of my brain kind of dropped it in, like, oh, wait a minute, this seems a little familiar, like I had seen it a long time ago. So, which was helpful, because then I could go, okay, I don't want to go unconscious again, right? Not in a bad way, like, oh, if you go unconscious, you're bad, but just I'd like to stay aware of what happens after the identity is seen. And so just keeping an eye on that, not letting conditioning come in and not letting is not the right word, but just staying aware of it coming in.
Just staying aware of the conditioning, maybe tendency to come in and want to take an awareness over, and to just I'm so reminded of as a response I got to a process text this week was all we're here to do is be aware mm-hmm. and bring it all into conscious, compassionate awareness.
Yeah.
And you know that's what I hear mm-hmm. you describing. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's mm-hmm. just you know, like you said, conditioning want to have plans for it and you know figure out well this is you know yeah. I got it now and all right. this, but. You're seeing that it's just an opportunity to watch it and watch it and watch yes. it and watch it and yeah. bring it into awareness.
Yeah, yeah, just to stay there and watch mm-hmm. it and not do anything. And mm-hmm. it's such a relief that I don't have to be that person. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the other thing I'm saying. It's just.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at first it was like I didn't really. It was like I knew there was that thing. What's it called? The facade or.
Cardboard Henry.
Yeah,
no.
yeah, that thing. Cardboard Henry. That there's a projection that I have to be that person. Uh-huh. And it's such a relief that I don't, that I can say, you know, I don't have enough money. Mm-hmm. I don't mm-hmm. have to go do that event mm-hmm. to show people that I have enough money to go do it. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's there's a quote about that. There's no shame in being poor, just being ashamed of being something like that. So the shame comes from being ashamed of being poor, not the shame in being poor or something like that.
Okay.
Somebody said it to me, I'm not saying it right, but yeah.
So we get caught up in the shame and,
yes.
you know.
Which that whole email class, oh my gosh.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like eating ice cream reading it. It was so like it just washed over me, like I was just like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing to read this in this place right now.
Uh-huh. Just that feeling of shame, that recognition of what that shame feels like, and to have it just wash over and know that it's, you know.
I should say it was like a massage instead of eating ice cream. Yeah, exactly. So it was just, it's just relaxing, really relaxing. Freedom.
Wow, how relaxing freedom is. Mm-hmm. You know, to just know that that we're not required to go with any conditioned or, you know, program about who or what we are, and that, you know, we can just see it and realize that it's a facade. It's, you know, I don't have to go there. Right. And just the great relief with that. To have a choice with that is just a miracle.
That I'm valuable without it.
Yeah.
You know, that the being is a value. Mm-hmm. And I think that I project that that's what attracts everyone to Sherry.
Yeah.
Is that there's no facade. It's mm-hmm. just all mm-hmm. whatever arises mm-hmm. is there. And, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just right. And yeah, that's so attractive. Mm-hmm. It's so compelling when we're in the... we're in the presence of that, mm-hmm. you know, and that what's authentic in us recognizes what's authentic in another person, and it gives us permission mm-hmm. to go with that authenticity. And wow, mm-hmm.
yeah, really amazing. Yeah, thank you,
Rebecca. Well, I've been having a workshop around. What I was thinking of as the illusion of control, mm-hmm. but now I'm looking at it a little differently, so let's see where it goes. But so what happened was, so I have a route that I run every day, pretty much every day, and sometimes I'll run and walk, because uh-huh. I'll get tired and then I'll start walking. And this has happened, you know, periodically. I wouldn't say frequently, but periodically. I'll just get a sense, and it happened this week, that there will just be, it'll just drop in the words, I'm going to run the whole way this time, mm-hmm. today. Mm-hmm. And I know every time that happens that I do.
Huh. Yeah, so every time that it drops, that... Is it a sense or a uh-huh. that I'm going to run the whole way today? And every time that drops in, you do run the whole way.
Exactly. And so when I'm heading up a hill, normally I would get these sensations, this is hard, now next thing I know I'm walking. Well, when that happens, when that sense is there prior to the start of the run, I never stop.
Interesting.
And the same thing has happened recently around the sits. I'll just get this sense, I'm going to count the breath the whole time. And I will. And it just happens. And it's not a decision, because I found that you can't fake that. Because I've tried the next morning, okay, I'm going to run the whole way, and next thing I know, I'm walking up the hill, you know. I can't fake it.
It can't be a decision, let's see, that comes from the mind,
from someone who's trying to count the breath, or someone who's trying to run the whole way,
someone who has control, someone like, okay, now I've got to figure it out, if I'm going to run the whole way, if I'm going to count the breath, the entire sit, all I have to do is make up my mind.
Yes.
And I can do it.
Yes, and I thought that was the make up my mind. I thought that was what it is too, but I don't know how I would describe it. It doesn't feel like I'm making up my mind. It feels like, because that in a way is in the same camp as making the decision to. It just happens.
Right.
It just falls in.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel like it ties in with the conversation was just happening, because the email class around shame, there is just a tremendous amount of shame in this identity that I can never succeed at anything I try. Eventually I'll fail, I'll stop, I can't be trusted to do anything I say I'm going to do all the way to the end. I can't ever get it across the line, blah, 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 right? All that. Raising kids was the only thing I've ever done to completion. And that I kind of didn't have a choice. They grew up, you know, so it's like, that just happened. But that's it. So there's that whole story that I think I'm just now seeing that's what's taking a hit whenever this drops in.
Okay.
It's like there's that identity that I often am. I'm going to run the whole way, or I'm going to, finish this project or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that Maria Rilke quote about in the shreds of my shame is where I found myself, or something like that. It's dropping in after this last conversation. What if that dropping in just sense is who I really am?
Yeah.
And that taking a hit, the identity taking a hit, doesn't have to hurt at all, actually. It only hurts when I forget that and get identified, that it's remembering who I really am, and that you can't fake it, and don't even try. Sometimes you'll walk, sometimes you'll run, sometimes you'll count the breath the whole time, sometimes you won't. So what? But remembering who I am is the whole thing, and it's all, and there is no control. Like, I can't, okay, now I'm going to make myself remember who I am. You know, that's just another version of trying to fake it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It just comes from another, I don't know, it's the whole thing we talked about. It's not coming from this brain that we are so used to assessing as the control center for our lives. It's dropping in at a different, through a different delivery.
It's grace.
It's grace.
It's grace. I mean, we just have to say it.
Yeah.
Christian, it's grace. But here's the thing that I've also seen about it is there's a direct correlation between this being's commitment to run every day and the grace having a way to drop in.
Mm-hmm.
So if I weren't doing that route every day, how would it ever drop in?
Yeah.
To that it's going to run, you know, it's like, and if I weren't sitting on the cushion, and, you know, so so there's the human that makes the commitment to do it and shows up, even if there's trying involved, big deal, that's no skin off the nose of grace, you know, it's like it can work with whatever, right? So there's the commitment to being there, and then that kind of mysterious place where we have to let go and realize that we can't, we're not really doing it.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's a, it's just, there's, yeah, it's that practicing like our hair is on fire, even though knowing that's not going to get us there.
Exactly.
You know, and, yeah, and yeah, it's that whole, you know, what we often talk about, to drop the conversation, uh-huh, so that life has an opportunity to deliver,
yeah,
what life wishes to deliver to us. Yeah. And what it's delivering all the time, but we don't catch it because we're, you know, we're busy, yeah, doing something else. So as you say, if you were laying on the couch every day,
yeah,
and you were making no attempt to run, that grace wouldn't have a place to land.
Yeah, wouldn't have access,
yeah,
to you.
Yeah, wouldn't have access to you.
Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, and it's just real freeing to see that, and reassuring in a really deep way to see that you can't fake it.
You can't.
Because I've tried, you know, it's like, oh, okay, there's that, okay, I know I can do it, so this time I'm going to do it. Uh-huh. I'm gonna say, yeah, to myself the same words that I hear when it says. And I wasn't really aware that I was, yeah, doing it. It was only in hindsight after, yeah, I was, you know, then it wouldn't, yeah, work, that I realized, okay, that doesn't work. Yeah. It has to just,
wow, as you're saying that, I'm just struck with what incredible kindness that we don't get away with that.
Uh-huh.
You know?
The ego will never be enlightened.
The ego will, yeah, never be enlightened. It's, yeah, never going to work.
Yeah.
And it's like, thank you, life.
Yeah.
And what only works is when we realize we have to do it in concert.
Yeah.
And with this other force,
yeah,
that we can't see, taste, touch, you know, mm-hmm, but have a direct experience of.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's what we truly are.
And it's what we truly are. It's pretty exciting.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Phil.
Yeah, it is pretty exciting. Huh? I had an experience recently, which I mean, I'm, you know, who knows, probably had a lot of times before, and but each time they're just fresh and new. And this one, I was talking with somebody and got what was equivalent to no, you know, just something I didn't want to hear that felt disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched my energy just drop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, felt like, and this to me is why it's been a good experience, because I was, I'm generally there for it, but at this time it somehow, when I was looking at it afterwards, I saw a picture. You know, like it was like as if, conditioning was there, just sucking up the life,
mm-hmm,
drawing it out, you know, mm-hmm, with a straw.
So you were receiving some information that somebody wished was going to be different,
yeah,
than what it was, and you were aware of conditioning being there, just siphoning the energy off like a straw with a straw. In that experience of getting this information,
yeah, I could feel it really deflate, and mm-hmm, it's like what was I going to say just about that? That's a process that I experience a lot. You know, I experience any time I get identified,
mm-hmm,
I can feel the life force being sucked out.
Uh-huh.
And so the first time this happened, and it was interesting because it happened twice in the same day. The first time it happened, I watched my energy go with it. And there was some stories, and there was a period of time where I was identified because my energy, mm-hmm, was not did not revive, didn't return. And all the stuff that kind of goes with that, stories and trying to figure out, stuff like that. And then I saw it, and I knew, I could see what has happened, I got identified, and it's kind of like what we were just saying, there is no, now I'm going to disidentify.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is just the practice of, I'll just move the focus on my attention to this here and now. And that I can do, whatever the moment is, breath, anything. Yeah. Not to try to disidentify, but because I'd rather be in the moment. And sometimes the, the residue's still there for a little bit, but pretty soon, all the energy's back and it's there.
So just that, there's just the willingness to come back to the present moment, to be here. No control over what your experience is going to be. I mean, what's going to be delivered to you in the way of experience in that moment, but just being willing to come back here and just,
Yeah, it's almost like, I'll just come back to the present and live with it. But that's not what happens, of course. Right. To come back to the present and the energy's rising, and pretty soon that was a forgotten deal. Yeah. I mean, like, it's a big who cares. And at this point, I realized the aspects of myself, as like in the musings, didn't even need anything except the acknowledgement. At this point in time.
Just the acknowledgement that it happened, that...
Well, the acknowledgement that, that it happened, there's disappointment, and this all happened so fast, that part, where it's like just staying, well, in this case, coming back and acknowledging it and staying with it, and it's not like I love the musings because there's such a distinction between, it wasn't ignoring it.
Yeah, exactly.
It was bringing it back to life. The being in the present kind of brought it all back to life. It was being with it.
Yeah, yeah. So just being with that experience and holding it there in the present moment, or what we might call it conscious compassionate awareness. It wasn't a denying of the disappointment. And that, that maybe somebody wish it had gone another way. But there's room to hold all of that here in this moment.
Yes. And I saw that more clearly, because I think that same day or the next day, I had this very same experience. And the person, I was asking the same kind of questions, and the person, in effect, was like a no answer. And I saw it. The same exact scenario starting up, the energy starting to go, and I stayed right there with the person. I stayed present. And that really brought the whole thing to life, noticing the two. And it really showed for me, anyhow, there's so much, because the energy never dropped, and it was like on the tipping point,
Wow.
And it didn't, and I didn't move, and it was so clear that that's a possibility. Number one, if we're right there and willing, and number two, that for me, there's so much information in what my energy's doing.
So if you're paying attention and you notice that the energy, you can. If you're watching the energy, you get a real big key that, this is, my attention is going someplace other than the present moment, and I am going to be lunch here,
Exactly, that was exactly it. And I've had that experience in great bigger things, where it felt like if I go with this, it's life or death. If I go with this, I am lunch, I'm cooked, because I know it's like the fear, everything's going to rise big time. But in these kind of a small moment by moment things, it was so perfect to see, because it wouldn't have lasted very long. But it was that I didn't, where I saw the whole process and the whole possibilities of what we have, you know, in any given time.
There's something you said I thought was just really key, is that you saw it starting to happen and you stayed present to the person
that you were talking to. That's all it did.
And in effect, you stayed present to this person. You did not abandon this person, and you didn't abandon the person that you were in conversation with. And wow.
It was exactly like sitting on the cushion. As a facilitator, and not being caught off either from in here or something out there.
Right.
And we can do that, you know, on the cushion. And I did it right there in my office, talking to somebody on the phone.
Wow, what a gift to everyone. I mean, to have the person that you're in conversation with to really have the experience of, it's like kind of what we were talking about earlier, you know, just somebody that's being authentic and just present.
Yeah.
You know? It's wow. And it doesn't matter, you know?
And to me, the whole possibility, you know, that can be done. It's kind of like what we're saying about the running, I guess. And I had no, either way, either time, nothing I did, you know, I mean, what created me to stay present there and not there? Who knows?
Years and years of, I mean, we might say years and years of showing up, sitting on the cushion, and being committed to awareness practice.
And it also shows, and I'm seeing more now, of course, that first time where it was like, you know, that speak of shame, you know, and it's like, oh God, I got caught. That was a good thing. Because it allowed me to see the second thing. So
Boy. Yeah, the juxtaposition of the two experiences. Like, wow, which would I choose? And to have them just come so closely one after the other. And wow, what an it again.
And I really think that also, I feel like a lot of the, you know, the early subpersonality work we did, we did a lot. In the beginning, before ego took it over, you know, I became friends with everybody. You know, I like to think of them like that, and I feel like I'm a team with them, and so they'll react pretty fast. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of talking and cajoling and getting back into compassion. You know, they seem to rebound very quickly.
Would you say that you've built that same kind of relationship you did with the person you were in conversation, you developed that with the aspects of the personality too? There's a trust there.
Yeah, and they trust me.
They trust you. So they don't have to work hard to get your attention or to be recognized. And
they don't, unless they're some hiding now, but it doesn't feel like it. They're pretty responsive, and you know, and as invisible aspects of that are illusionary, we're very nice with me, most of the time, as long as I'm here. I just really appreciate that, because I think a lot of it comes together, of course, also too, with all the, you know, the email classes, the phone calls, the retreats we're doing, the groups. Just also amazing.
Wow, it is so amazing. And I, you know, just like what I talk about, no mistakes.
No mistakes.
How that, you know, in a place of not paying attention, that first experience might be classified as a mistake. Mm-hmm. It's not the way, and not, this is bad. I don't want to ever put myself in that position again.
Yeah.
And then to see how it wasn't a mistake. It was just
it's perfect.
A perfect.
And it goes back to the life has the bigger picture, trust no matter what.
Because
that's what. Oh, and just the whole thing that what happens, what I love to call it that, everything, when the energy either comes back or didn't leave, it's like everything comes back to life. Mm-hmm. And you know how we just say, oh, yeah. I came back to life? It really, I came back to life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I love that too. The emotion of coming back to life in all its aspects. Mm-hmm. So thanks.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
I'd like to look at something that I don't yet have a ton of clarity about. I'm just kind of putting that out there. But I love these conversations this morning. It's great. The word disappointment came up, and it just kind of brought up this big disappointment that I've been feeling mm-hmm. recently, kind of around communication with my family. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I left home to come here to practice at the monastery, my family was like, we're going to miss you so much, and how often can we talk, you know? I mean, and it really made it sound like they wanted to talk with you.
It sounded like they wanted to talk to you.
and it was funny because at that time I was kind of like a little, I was like, well, I don't know, you know, it's probably not going to be that much, but, you know, it'll be some, you know, we're going to be able to maintain that kind of connection and communication, and then kind of working out through the commitment letter that it was going to be, it seemed like it was going to work best to support my practice for it to be once a month. Mm-hmm. And when I was leaving home, I got the impression like that was barely going to be enough.
That would, yeah.
You know, yeah. From there?
That would be really disappointing for everybody, and it wouldn't be enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I've kept my commitment to write every month, and which has been a joy, and uh-huh. it's just fine. I mean, I just love it. Uh-huh. And they write most months, not every month, for sure. I think twice I've missed the whole month, and like, where are these people? And then my dad's girlfriend, who I wasn't terribly close with before I left, I mean, they're a fairly new thing. She's pretty much the one who writes me.
That's interesting.
It's like my dad, he just like kind of scribbles like four or five sentences. Uh-huh. And that's it. Uh-huh. It's sweet though that he does. Uh-huh. My brother, who I am super, super close with, and we've been super close all our lives, I have not heard from once. Uh-huh. Just not once. And there's this like, really, this is sadness mm-hmm. and like disappointment. Mm-hmm. Disappointment and hurt. Like, I talked a little bit in guidance about this, and what I got was that kind of that, you know, in a way, disappointment can be really clean. It's just that kind of discrepancy between what you thought was going to happen and what's happening. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought I was going to hear from them. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to hear from them a lot, and we're going to have this close relationship through letters, and it was going to be great. And then what's happening is very different than what I thought, and mm-hmm. I'm disappointed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now I'm kind of looking at kind of where to go from there. Some of the encouragement I got in guidance. Well, let me rewind a minute. I did this totally typical type 9 kind of thing. Oh my gosh. I kind of wish that I hadn't, but because now I'm going to have to kind of go back on that. But you know, when I hadn't heard from him after 3 months or something, I was so disappointed. But at the same time, it was like I started rationalizing it. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, I know he's super busy. Mm-hmm. He's got a couple of kids, and he's coming into the busy season with his job, and he just bought a new house and he's trying to remodel, so he's got a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And boy, I really don't want to put any pressure on him, you know, and I certainly don't want to kind of make him feel guilty or bad. Mm-hmm. And I really hate it when he does that to me, so I'm not going to do that. So I wrote something to the effect of, I didn't say anything about disappointment. I just said, I know you're really busy, so, I'd love to hear from you. I don't expect to hear from you. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, kind of true, but I kind of did expect to hear from him.
Yeah.
And then I think I wrote some similar another couple months later. By that point in time, it had turned into this whole, like, where are you kind of thing. Uh-huh. And now it's like looking at how can I communicate authentically and vulnerably from a place that's true, from my experience, which is that I am disappointed and that I miss him and that relationship is important to me and that I want to communicate. And to find a way to do that without either slipping into, on the one side, accommodating and trying to like deny my experience, like I've been doing, or on the other side, it's like if I suppress kind of my need or kind of deny it long enough, it can turn into anger, kind of.
Yeah.
And so on the other side, it's like, what the heck, man? Like, where are you? And so like, just trying to find that balance of authentic communication. Yeah.
So just trying to find that balance of what's authentic between wanting to, you know, like, oh, it's the nine orientation. It's okay. I understand. Yeah, you know, fine. I don't want to make waves with this thing. You know, I can swallow it. It's, you know, the other side, just being really, you know, squashing that so long that it's bound to come out as anger.
Yeah.
You know, at some way or another, if not direct, you know, some kind of passive, you know, anger.
Yeah. That's great to say that because I see that. Sometimes it's kind of like inside, it's like really direct kind of like blaming. Like, how could you? Blah, 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 blah. But often it kind of squirts out kind of sideways in this passive thing. Yeah. I'm like, well, fine. They don't need me, then I don't need them. And I just won't say anything, and I'm just going to kind of, and that's this whole passive, angry thing.
What's interesting is that I heard you express what felt to me like a really authentic communication. Very authentic. I miss you.
Yeah.
I'm really disappointed that our communications haven't been as frequently as I had hoped.
Yeah.
And it's a loss.
Yeah.
You know, and
I value the relationship.
I value the relationship with you. I love you.
Yeah. It could be that clean, that simple. And that's great too, because it saves a lot of time. It doesn't have to be pages and pages. That's what I love about communicating from the heart and authentic. It's like, it's so simple.
Yeah.
It doesn't take hardly any time. Yeah.
And I don't know if I... then that communication doesn't happen when it turns into be a 20-page letter of, you know, and to just sit down and just, you know... Two lines of what's real.
That's great. Even saying that, I feel like I am going to be required to practice refraining in kind of, because I think the conditioned thing at this point would want to be to like say a lot more. That would kind of at first seem like I was kind of coming from the heart, but would might maybe kind of slip into some little passive, aggressive kind of things. That would take me completely away from where I want to go.
Yeah.
So just keeping it simple
and
authentic.
Yeah. Hmm. I myself would kind of use the recorder for this sometimes. To just say it into the recorder, what I want to say.
Yeah.
And to play it back and listen to it and, you know, to just get a sense of.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it's staying with the heart and when it's. Yeah.
Thanks. That's helpful. It's so good to have, to not just go directly into like pressing send, you know, or just writing it. Like I actually wrote a letter that I knew I wasn't going to send, just to kind of wrote everything that kind of wanted to be said, and then I recorded it, and I was like, whew, that's definitely not sending that one. Draft one. So it's kind of good to give myself the space and time to let the inauthentic stuff. Be seen and come out to kind of give the time for the authentic message that's still in there wanting to be expressed to bubble up.
Yeah. One of the gifts of letter writing.
It's nice. Having that time.
To have to be able to take our time and say what's real and
And not say what we'd regret.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks.